Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There's one undeniable truth about Puccini. Audiences can never get enough of him. I'm John Schaefer, and ahead on Soundcheck, we'll get to the bottom of Puccini's popularity. We'll also share three new CDs in our CD Picks of the Week, and we'll hear live music from the chamber pop band called Ra Ra Riot. To begin, December 22nd of this year marks the 150th birthday of Giacomo Puccini, and already new recordings are out, celebrations are planned around the states. Still, it can be hard to tell that there's anything really happening. After all, every year sees countless productions of La Bohème and Madame Butterfly and Tosca. One thing is different, though. Puccini's hometown of Lucca, Italy, is pulling out the stops this summer. The Tuscan town has opened a new 3,300-seat amphitheater, and it's staging four of his operas. Our old friend Fred Plotkin, music writer and author of books like Opera 101, joins us on the line from Lucca, Italy. Fred, good to talk to you again.
Buongiorno, John.
So every year seems to be Puccini year here in the States. How is this year different there in his hometown?
Well, let me just correct one thing first. He was born in Lucca, but he lived in nearby Torre del Lago, and that's where the new theater is. And the difference is that there are exhibitions everywhere about him. And they have built a beautiful exhibition in Lucca that I went to today that documents his early life, his birth here. He was the sixth of seven children. His father died when he was very young. His mother, at the age of 34, held the family together, got Giacomo off to music school. He was very talented, but he was also very wild, even early on. And that is documented in the show. He was quite playful, let's put it that way, and he liked the girls. And therefore, he didn't necessarily apply himself until he realized it was the family destiny. He was the fifth generation of composers in the Puccini family, and it was his job to basically continue that role.
So he was in Lucca, but the piece of music we heard at the top of the show there, that was Tosca live at the 54th Puccini Festival at Torre del Lago. This is where he spent, you say, a good portion of his adult life.
Well, he spent much of his adult life there, but I'm going to clarify something. I've been traveling to great music festivals all over Italy. That was in Macerata, and that's in the Marche region at the Sveti Stadio Theater conducted by Daniele Caligari.
Well, I have now gone
to performances, yes, in Torre del Lago.
And how much of Puccini's presence do you feel in Macerata or in Torre del Lago? Or is it really focusing mostly in Lucca?
Well, Lucca and Torre del Lago and Viareggio are the towns where he lived, and therefore they're making a big fuss about him. If you go to other parts of Italy, for example, if you go to Pesaro, where they have the Rossini Festival, Rossini's number one. If you go to Parma or to Milan, Verdi is really number one. But around here, Puccini is really the guy. I went into a store today called Visi d'Arte, I Live for Art, and there was a very dramatic woman in there who owns the shop, and she was playing Puccini recordings. And I said, "Signora, for you, Puccini must be the greatest." And she said, "Of course he is, and we live for him." And she said, "Not everybody appreciates him as we do." Right here, it's Puccini Central, and he is deeply felt. I spoke to another fellow today, and he said that the passion that the people of Lucca have is the passion they hear in his music, and they don't hear that in other composers to that degree. So it's very Tuscan. It's very particular to hear.
Sounds like soccer, you know, where every town has its own team and they feel really, really passionate about it.
They do. He's playing at home when he plays in Torre del Lago.
Yeah. Now, they've been doing some lesser known, I mean, you know, La Bohème, Madame Butterfly, Tosca, these are the great hits. Puccini's Edgar, not such a big hit. Are some of these lesser known operas, are they appearing to be worth reconsidering?
Well, I heard it in concert this April with Opera Orchestra of New York, conducted by Eve Queller.
Back here in New York.
Musically, that was a very good performance back in New York in Carnegie Hall. Musically, it's fascinating. The plotting is a bit strange. It's a mix of Wagner and Bizet. It's a story of one man torn between a very good woman named Fidelia, or Elizabeth in Tannhäuser, and a very bad woman but very sexy named Tigrana, which would be like Venus in Tannhäuser, except that Tigrana acts like Carmen. She's a gypsy, she's wild, she smokes, the whole thing. And the title character, Edgar, really understands two sides of himself, the more Apollonian and the more Dionysian. It's very Puccini, if you think about it. He was about to get married when he was writing this opera, and I know that some of the pull that he felt, that Dionysian pull, is expressed in the very sensual music in this opera. There's a great duet in Act Two that really brings down the house between Edgar and Tigrana.
We're speaking with Fred Plotkin, who is live on the phone from Lucca, Italy, the birthplace of Giacomo Puccini, whose sesquicentennial, 150th anniversary, we mark this year here in the States and there in Tuscany. Now, you had a chance to speak to Alberto Veronese, the artistic director of the Puccini Festival, and he actually had something to say about these early Puccini works. All right, well, I thought we might have a chance to hear from Alberto Veronese, and now I'm told that we do have him, so we'll hear him speaking and then actually conducting a little bit of the opera Edgar by Puccini.
The opera by Puccini are a little strange because he was not so aware of his means as an operatic musician. He was more symphonic before. He had a very good symphonic music before starting opera, and he started opera with probably not a mature sense of the libretto, a mature sense of the words. And so the stories of the first two operas, Le Villi and Edgar, are a little complicated, a little extravagant, and so not fully dramatic as the mature Puccini.
Music from the Puccini opera Edgar, conducted by Alberto Veronese, whom we heard speaking. He is the artistic director of the Puccini Festival and spoke with our guest, Fred Plotkin, in Tuscany, Italy, where the plans are well underway to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Puccini's birth. And Fred, why is Puccini so popular throughout the United States when his popularity seems to be more a regional matter in his home country?
Well, there are a few reasons for that. One is that Verdi, who is for most people the most popular composer here, was Italy's composer when Italy became a nation. His operas were about national identity. They covered big themes. They were about grande anima, big souls, Aida, people like that are big personalities in big operas. Whereas even the biggest Puccini personalities, such as Tosca, are smaller, and they're surrounded by fewer people. And it's about the relationships between men and women. What I've been reminded of in these days visiting Italy, and especially Tuscany, is the beautiful sexual undercurrent that one feels in everything. People are affectionate. People look at one another differently than we do in America. And that sensuality is very typical of Puccini. And I think what we Americans respond to is that bit of heat. plus the beautiful melody. We don't follow the stories as much. We don't know the politics of Italy as much, but we identify with the travails of a leading character, and usually Tosca, Butterfly, Mimi, a woman. And Puccini knew women, and that comes absolutely across.
He apparently knew several women, and we can follow up on that thread in a little bit, because there's a bit of controversy about a couple of dueling granddaughters, perhaps, there in Italy. But before we leave the question of his popularity here in the States, Puccini actually lived in the States for a number of years and wrote a set of operas for the Met. What did that do for his kind of visibility here?
A great deal. In fact, I learned just today at the exhibit that he lived at the Hotel Knickerbocker, which was on 42nd Street in Broadway, because the Met was on 39th Street in Broadway. And he wrote first La Fanciulla del West, which will have its centennial in 2010, an American subject, a very feisty woman, very independent. In fact, I spoke to a friend of mine today, and he said of all the Puccini characters he would have an affair with, the one he wants to have an affair with is Minnie. And he said, in part, because Minnie most resembles his Italian wife, he was quick to add. Now, the other thing is that the Trittico, which are Italian subjects mostly, they're based on the Divine Comedy. Il Tabato is Purgatory, Suor Angelica is Paradiso, and Gianni Schicchi is Inferno, are very funny, they're very appealing, and he wrote them for New York. So the fact that he literally planted, not literally, but he planted his musical DNA, if not any other DNA, in New York, meant that we developed a tradition of knowing him and loving him. Verdi didn't come to New York, Wagner didn't come to New York, Puccini did. And then when WNYC was founded in 1924, Puccini just died. And Mayor LaGuardia, who had a relationship with NYC, was in effect the boss, loved Puccini. And he demanded that more Puccini be played than any other composer. So for that reason, we New Yorkers really grew up knowing those melodies, and that's why we love him more.
Well, I guess if you were a New Yorker growing up in the 20s and 30s, you grew up with
it. Well, I learned from my parents.
So, now, you spoke to a fan from L.A. there at the Puccini Festival, someone who compared Puccini to Andrew Lloyd Webber. Is, whatever you think of Andrew Lloyd Webber, is that an accurate assessment of the kind of status of Puccini on the stage?
Well, we have to start by saying that she nicknamed herself Cat, as in the musical, so that will tell you a little bit of it. But the point is melody, 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 plus a fair amount of sentimentality and not too much challenging of the intellect, if I can put it so bluntly. And what we really have is he bores in straight to the heart. If you want to analyze things, you go to Wagner. You can find analysis in Beethoven and Mozart, many other composers. Puccini goes nonstop to other parts of the body, and that's what we experience. And people who know the melody and love it tend to really respond to that. And I don't blame them for that. I love it too. But Mozart also had great melody.
Fred Plotkin is with us on the line from Lucca, Italy, the birthplace of Giacomo Puccini, the great opera composer. Kat Paulin would not argue with the use of the word great. She is a big fan, and this is what she told Fred.
I love Cats, and when Andrew Lloyd Webber had that musical Cats, of course I had to see it, and I was reading about it, and some critics said it was the music was very much like Puccini, and I didn't know who Puccini was, I admit. So I wanted to listen to Puccini, and at first I could see some kind of similarity in, you know, the if I may call it, the aria memory seemed to have some similarity to Umbeldi and Mi chiamano Mimi. But after a few seconds, I could see, to me, it was like one is cream and the other is skim milk. But when it comes to Puccini, there is really no comparison to me. I mean, it's just fuller, stronger, more ravishing, I think, is the word.
So do you feed your cat skim milk or cream?
Fred Plotkin in conversation with Kat Paulin. Hard-hitting question there, Fred. but let me, you know, this does raise a question. Or, you know, actually goes to something, a phenomenon we've seen here in New York, which is Puccini's kind of relationship with pop culture, Baz Luhrmann bringing, La Boheme to Broadway, as Toby on the website on our soundcheck page, WNYC.org, points out, don't forget that Jonathan Larson's Rent was inspired by Puccini's La Boheme. So he somehow does have his tendrils reaching into the pop music world.
He certainly does. He was very forward-thinking, and he studied all kinds of composers from Schoenberg to Strauss that we don't recognize quite in him, and I don't want to belittle his melodies because they're wonderful. He was thinking toward a great musical future that was much more esoteric than he ever got to realize because, as we know, he died of cancer during a botched operation in Brussels, rather young. And therefore, we would only wonder where he might have gone musically. But he certainly looked toward the 20th century. Don't forget, he knew electric light. I saw letters he wrote on typewriters. I learned that he owned 15 cars. He loved to drive. He loved machinery. He was a modern man. And
a wealthy man. A very wealthy man, too.
Well, he built his villa in Torre del Lago in the late 1890s just on the royalties of La Boheme. And a little bit, Mama Lascaux. He still was to write Tosca, Madama Butterfly, Treat Decode, and Turandot. He wouldn't make the money on because he didn't live. But he made so much money on his operas in his lifetime, he could live in a grand way. And he did.
And the story goes, left behind an estate worth something like $250 million when he died in 1924, which, you know, is a king's ransom now. You can imagine what that was like back then.
And they had to calculate it in lira, which would be in the billions.
So we've been talking a little bit about the various Puccini operas, but La Boheme certainly is one of them. Let's hear a little bit of the composer whose 150th anniversary we're celebrating this year, both here in the States and in his hometown of Lucca, Italy. Puccini's La Boheme. There are not one but two competing new recordings of this Puccini favorite out now to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Puccini's birth. This is the Robert Spano Atlanta Symphony Orchestra performance, and we're speaking with Fred Plotkin, the author of numerous books, including Opera 101 and Classical Music 101. He's with us on the line from Lucca, Italy, and he has sent us a couple of videos of his perambulations around Torre del Lago and the Lucca area there in Tuscany, and you can see those on the soundcheck page of our website. My blog is online there as well, and you can leave a comment at the soundcheck page, WNYC.org. Fred, you said before he knew women. He was known as a hunter, a chain smoker, a multimillionaire, and as a womanizer. Now, how much of Puccini the man do we see reflected in these operas?
Well, certainly in Edgar, we already saw the dichotomy between the faithful husband, although we have to remember that he impregnated the woman, her name was Elvira, who became his wife when she was still married to someone else. But when she became his wife, she became rather jealous of his purported dalliances. I mean, we don't really know. We can kind of assume, and there are many stories that came out, but somehow these stories stick. I can only think that when I look at his characters, when I look at Mimi, and I look at Manon Lescaut especially, but also some of the others, that he understood la femmina, as the Italians say. He understood the whole female essence, and that's what comes out in his music. So I can only imagine that it was not purely by conjecture, but through a great deal of personal research.
Well, now, the composer's granddaughter, Simonetta Puccini, who runs that lakeside villa that we see you nearby in one of the videos, has launched a really furious public campaign against Nadia Manfredi, a woman who claims that she, too, is a granddaughter of Puccini. How big a deal is this over there in Italy?
Well, it is something of a deal. There's apparently going to be a film about this that will open at the Venice Film Festival. When I was in Torre del Lago, there were petitions being taken up to, as they said, defend the honor of the maestro Puccini and to not go into his private life. I'm sort of waiting for other people to pop up and say, I'm his granddaughter. I mean, I'll be his great-grandson if it works. But it happens in Italy. There are these waves of things. It's called polemica. And Italians love polemica. And right now, the soccer teams are not playing. The Olympic team is doing really well in Italy, so there's no polemic there. And the government is on vacation, so they need something. And right now, the polemica happens to be this. But, you know, another thing that happened is that when the Berlusconi government came in April, because it was a new government and Tuscany is left-wing and he's right-wing, there were cuts to the Puccini Festival just before they were going to begin their season. And I found a cartoon in a magazine called Luca Musica that says cuts of €1.5 million to the Puccini Foundation. And there's a picture of him in a jacket and tie and hat, but then in boxer shorts. And it says, thanks for the jacket, but I would have preferred the whole suit. That's how Italians are seeing this, as polemica. And so right now, Puccini, although he was born 150 years ago, is a hot topic.
So there is this movie being made about the dueling, perhaps, granddaughters. There's also a documentary, another documentary in the works, isn't there? Or is that it?
That I don't know about. That may be it. But there's one that's supposed to have been made that opens at the Venice Film Festival in September.
Now, you did ask the conductor Roberto Abbado about how Puccini foreshadowed the techniques of film music, and here is what Abbado said.
When the movie theater didn't exist yet, Puccini was able to invent a new way to present sceneries, which goes already before the movie theater in the movie direction. In other words, I'm saying that he had that sensitivity to come earlier with the technique that will be developed after him.
So we think of Puccini as, you know, kind of an old-fashioned composer, Fred. The big hit tunes, the flowing melodies at a time when Arnold Schoenberg and Igor Stravinsky and Béla Bartók were doing a very different form of music. It sounds like, from what Roberto Abbado was saying, that in his own way he too was kind of a forward-looking guy.
It was interesting. I chatted with Roberto Abbado in Pesaro, where he was conducting Erminione by Rossini, which is as old-fashioned as you can get. So when we were talking about Puccini, he in part was comparing it to the old mentality of Rossini. But with Puccini, as I said, he was a modernist who just didn't quite get appreciated. I think that his talent, his extreme talent, was in painting imagery with music, so that we could see pictures, and he could create Japan or China, or at least an image of those places, or Paris, or poverty, with his music. And that fed into early film music and film style. In fact, there was an exhibit in Torre del Lago, a wonderful one, about Puccini and cinema. And they had pictures of many of his stories, such as Manon Lescaut and a film they called Harakiri, which was Madame Butterfly, silent movies based on Puccini.
And, of course, Tosca, not too many years ago, made it to the big screen as well. Fred Plotkin is the author of Opera 101 and Classical Music 101 and a regular guest of ours on Soundcheck. He is there in Lucca, Italy, the hometown of the birthplace of Giacomo Puccini. We are marking his 150th anniversary this year. Fred, it sounds like you've been having a great time. If the video clips on our website are any indication, thanks very much for spending some time with us this afternoon.
Thank you, John.
Here's a little bit from Puccini's Tosca. From Puccini's Tosca, Vici d'Arte, celebrating the 150th anniversary of his birth. Up next on Soundcheck, our CD picks of the week, and then coming up later, the band Ra Ra Riot has gained critical acclaim and survived some tough times. Now they are releasing their first full-length album, and they'll join us to play live in our studio. This is Soundcheck.